It's time for Wealth DNA with Ron the Ronald Naraki. It's time to check your Wealth DNA so you can enjoy the second half of life. Here's the host of the show, Ron Naraki.
Hello, welcome to the Wealth DNA radio show, and I'm honored you're just today. I'm broadcasting remotely from my office in Europe. Hopefully the sound quality... Oh, now I'm getting a little feedback. Sorry about that. Okay. Today I'm broadcasting remotely from my office in Europe. Hopefully the sound quality be much better than our last show, which could at best be called... It's 8 a.m. in Phoenix, Arizona, but already 5 p.m. where I am in continental Europe. We're continuing our series on direct investment in real estate, and today's show will be far different than usual. We'll cover the fourth investment strategy, namely private mortgage lending, in more detail. In this show, we're going to try several innovations, things we have not done before. First, we'll do this show in the format of a seminar. And second, we'll do it in a multimedia format. Let me explain that. If you either use the link that was sent to you in the invitation to the show, or go to the wealthdna.us website, you'll find a link to the presentation so that you can follow along. Now, you'll actually have a choice on wealthdna.us. You can either click the link, which gives you the PowerPoint slides, or you can choose the PDF format. Both have some advantages and disadvantages. The PowerPoint slides give you the slides with all of the timing of the bullet points so that they don't all come thrown up at you all at the same time. They'll progressively come up. But unfortunately, it will use your entire screen, which means that if you want to get to the chat window, you can't without leaving the program. You can always return, of course. The PDF file, you can open in a portion of your screen, and that's the one I'm using, so I obviously need the chat window open. The disadvantage is you don't have the timing of the slides. So your choice, try one or try the other, or try one and then switch to the other, either way. But you'll be able to save a copy of the presentation for future reference, and for those of you that choose this strategy, you will keep that presentation for future reference, I'm sure. Now, as we progress through the presentation, I'll mention the slide numbers to help you follow along. Today is July 23rd, 2012. It is 8:02 in Phoenix, Arizona, and 5:02 in Continental, just switched to 5:03 according to my clock in Continental Europe. You're listening to the Wealth DNA radio show. I'm your host, Ron Naraki. This show airs every second and fourth Monday. I was going to say fourth and second, which is also true since this is fourth, but second and fourth Monday at 8 a.m. in Arizona. Now, I certainly hope you can join us each time we air, but if you miss a show, you can hear it on the archives. Just go to wealthdna.us, where we list each of the shows, both upcoming and archive. Now, as I mentioned, today's show is in the format of a seminar. Specifically, we'll call it Learn to Earn a Higher Return Seminar. You can download the presentation, as I mentioned, from www.wealthdna.us. And you have your choice of PowerPoint slides or the PDF file. I do suggest one of those. It will be easier to follow along. Now, hopefully you've already opened one of those versions because we're ready to get going. Lots of material to cover. The very first slide... already, besides showing the title, Learn to Earn a Higher Return, gives you some of the advantages and attributes we'll be talking about. Specifically, that these investments are secured, they're insured, and they give you high returns. The pictures there also give you a bit of a hint that we're talking about real estate investments, specifically residential. We're not talking about a bank or Wall Street investment. Gee, maybe the Occupy Wall Street crowd could have used this symbol, and then we would have a second name for them, which would be the Wall Street Bank Busters. Just a thought. But anyway, they didn't choose this symbol. We did. Now, if we move to slide 2, which I would recommend, you'll see a pictorial hint of what we're going to talk about, building wealth, and specifically talking about earning a higher return, and the briefcase you see in front of you happens to have $1 billion in it. That's where we want you to be, the billionaire status. Let's move ahead to page 3, and that will show you our roadmap. We'll start by talking about how banks make money. We'll also share some different ways to invest, and then we'll focus a little bit on the 5 factors you should use anytime you consider a new investment. We'll then use that specific framework to evaluate private mortgage lending and talk about the details of how to do it, which assets you can use, as well as the risks, legal aspects, and taxes. Now, think about the various investment seminars you've been to. How often do they cover the risks? As always on this show, we try to cover the full truth, the good news, the bad news, as well as the risks. Now, we'll end up today talking about the choice of doing it yourself or partnering with somebody, hopefully somebody that has experience. I'll bring up a copy of this roadmap periodically through the presentation to help you keep track of what we've covered and what we'll be covering next. Let's move ahead to slide 4 and talk about how banks make money. As you can see, a displayed table that shows several columns. One of them is the bank borrowing money from an investor or a saver. And I'm going to assume that they've borrowed $160,000, which is a typical amount for a house loan. That's why I've chosen that amount. That could come from one investor or several. And today, realistically, they're paying about 0.5% for a one-year CD. The bank, in turn, then takes that money and lends it as a mortgage on an investment property. That's the second column. Notice I'm not showing a 4 to 4.5% rate, which they might charge for a mortgage on an owner-occupied property. I'm showing a rate that's significantly higher. You see, banks don't like lending to investors, so they charge a premium. Now, if you're the investor lending that money to the bank at 0.5%, do they pay you monthly interest? No, they pay you at the end of your CD. So you would earn $800 at the end of the year when the CD matures. Now, if you were paid monthly, the equivalent would be about $67. Let's switch to the investor who borrowed the money or the bank lent the money to. He's paying the bank, he or she is paying the bank $867 per month, which happens to be over $10,000 a year. Now, I pick these particular interest rates not only because they're representative, but it also makes a very clear point. If you look at the profit column, you'll see that the bank is making $800 per month. You, as the CD holder, congratulations, you make $800 per year. In other words, the bank earns 12 times as much as they pay you. Now, the box at the bottom of the slide sums it up. Banks make money on your money. And if you haven't run these numbers before, you may now understand why I refer to CDs as certificates of depreciation. Others I've heard call them a crummy deal. Now, there's one more factor before we move off this slide I'd like to mention. That $160,000 mortgage in the lend column that was made to an investor, the bank can take that loan to the central bank, which in the U.S. is called, of course, the Federal Reserve. The bank can generally borrow 80 to 90% of that amount to make more loans. In other words, they don't have to get more CD depositors to make the next loan. When you keep repeating that process, the bank will actually be able to make loans to the tune of $1.2 billion on your $160,000 loan to them. We'll talk about this a little bit more because it turns out that you as a private mortgage lender can do some of the same. Unfortunately, you can't borrow from the Federal Reserve at nearly 0% rates the way banks do, but you can leverage the loans you make. Let's move on to slide 5. Lots of information there, but very, very key information. On slide 5, I'm going to refute what many bankers say publicly. And if you have friends working for banks, some of those friends will actually believe what they're telling you. Bankers will say they're lending, just like they always did. Now, this chart is taken directly from the Federal Reserve's own data, and it's not from a year or 3 years ago. It is taken just over this past weekend. It shows the change in lending year over year in billions of dollars. That's the scale. It's the change in lending year over year in billions of dollars. So by the end of the recession, which is that end of the gray shaded line, banks were lending nearly $200 billion less than the year before. And today, we've officially exited that recession, and they're now lending at the same rate they were before, which means far, far less than they used to. So the next time a banker tells you they're lending just like they always have, let them show you the data. You already know the answer. Now, since we're not talking about general lending, that one happens to be for all commercial loans, let's switch to page 6, or slide 6, I should say, which is basically the same chart, again, same scale, billions of dollars of change in lending. This one happens to be for real estate loans made, exactly our topic today. Now, notice it continues to drop. So this year, banks are lending about $170 billion less than last year, which was a measly amount compared to the year before, which is far, far lower than the year before that. And by the way, the vast majority of the loans that banks are making are actually using government money. So it's not really the money you lent to them on your CD. They're really lending money that you and I pay to the government in taxes. Now, what are they doing with the money you lend them? Well, that topic's starting to get covered a lot in the media. They're making more speculative investments instead of bothering to lend to businesses and investors. Let's move on to slide 7. And we're going to move on to the next topic with that. We're switching to the next topic, owning versus loaning. See, despite all of the complexity that financial advisors and authors will talk about, the many investment alternatives and strategies, options, hedging, straddles, all of that kind of good stuff, there are fundamentally only two ways to invest. How's that for keeping things simple? You can either own something or you can loan on something. It's that simple. It would really be helpful after this show if you review your portfolio and ask yourself how many of the positions I have are really ownership positions and how many are lending positions to make sure that your portfolio is in sync with your investment objectives. Now, how do loaning and owning compare? Well, in general, and I covered on this slide here, loaning tends to be safer than owning. It's a fact, and we'll cover it in a little bit more detail here in the next few slides. In general, and I love things in general, owning gives you a higher return than loaning, at least in the long term. And when we talk about long term, I'm talking about 15 or 20 years, not a year. We'll cover a lot more on this particular topic today, not just in the next few slides, but throughout today's show. Let's move on to slide 8, where I show you some examples of investments where you own something and also some investments where you loan on something. I expect this will contradict what financial advisors have told you, or at least what they implied in their wording. You can own stocks because, in essence, a stock is an ownership stake in the company. Now, if you make a loan to that same company, I don't care if it's AT&T or Intel or Walmart, the largest company, or Exxon, you can own the stock in that company, or you can loan them money. When you loan them money, it's called a bond. So for those of you that think you own a bond, that is a misnomer. You have a piece of paper that documents your loan to the company. Now, most of our listeners own a home, which is our next row there, and that clearly is ownership. The mortgage holder, on the other hand, usually a bank, loaned you money to buy that home. They hold it. They hold a mortgage because they've secured that loan with a lien on your property. Now, you also most likely own a car, and a few of you may have a car loan. And again, some bank or financial institution lent you the money to buy that car. You get the idea, and the similar on the next two examples. You could own a rental property, and either a bank or a private investor could lend money in the form of a mortgage. You could own shares in a private company, like BI Solutions Corp, for example, or you could lend money to a private company. If you lend it to a bank, they call it CDs. My company happens to call them MP3s, kind of the 21st century version of CDs. Okay, let's move on to slide 9, where we'll talk a little more detail on those common examples. Now recall, I said that in general, owning gives you a higher return in the long term. So therefore, stock should give you a better return in the long term than bonds. Okay. Now, what happens if the company files for bankruptcy? Who ends up better off, the stockholder or the bondholder? Clearly, the bondholder is the first that gets paid. And if all of the bondholders get paid off, then the stockholders get what's left. More often than not, that would be zero left over. Now, how about your home compared to the mortgage loan on it? Do you as the homeowner earn more over 30 years, or does the bank earn more on interest payments? They happen to have a truth in lending statement that comes with every mortgage, and you'll probably see that the amount of interest that you pay over the 30 years will far exceed the value of the mortgage. It's often 2 to 3 times the value of the mortgage. The clearest example of how this general rule doesn't fit is your car and your car loan. At the end of 3 to 5 years, who earned more, you, the car owner, or the lender? Hopefully I made my point. In general, owning usually has a higher return. Loaning is safer, but as all general rules, they're not always true. Let's move on to slide number 10. We'll talk about the 4 different ways to invest in real estate, which we've covered in the last few shows. And we've covered them in quite a bit of detail. But notice here I've put them in the columns of owning versus loaning. So 3 of the strategies we talked about, fix and sell or fix and flip, lease to own and fix and rent, are all ownership strategies. There's only one that is a loaning strategy, and that is private mortgage lending. Now on this slide, I do include the 5th option, which incidentally, most commonly selected by most investors, and that is to do nothing. I don't recommend that alternative, and yet the vast majority of investors will choose that one. Let's move on to slide 11, which reiterates the same information and just adds one thing. We're emphasizing what BI Solutions focuses on. In other words, our specialty is lease to own. That's our ownership strategy. And also loaning, private mortgage loans. So hopefully I can lend something to this conversation. Now, notice we did not pick number 5, and I don't recommend it for you either. All right, on slide 12, I share that roadmap again. What we've already covered is in faint blue type, and the next topics we're going to cover, private mortgage lending. What is it, and why would you want to be a private mortgage lender? Okay, so let's move to slide 13 and talk about those two topics. What is a private lender? Now, the point I want to make ahead of time to get your attention is most listeners, which probably includes you, are already private lenders. Are there any famous examples? Well, 2 come to mind, Warren Buffett and Carlos Slim. Now, most people or most investment seminars, they tend to pick on Warren Buffett and try to use his expertise to somehow give credibility to their topic. I won't do that. Let me pick the other one. Let me pick Carlos Slim, another mega billionaire. Let's move on to slide 14, and you'll see some information about why I chose him, and you'll also see his picture if you've never seen him before. Despite being one of the richest people on the planet, he's not well known outside Mexico, where the majority of his investing is done. Now, when you see his picture, you'll realize that there are a number of similarities that he and I have. I both have DNA. For should I just talk about the things? And I wrote he. He is not the same. Yes. So note. Now, the other observation you would appropriately make is that neither Carlos Slim nor I have accumulated wealth because of our good looks. Neither of us are likely to be chosen for the next starring role in the next big blockbuster movie. Now, putting all seriousness aside, let's move to the facts on this slide. The little article on this slide 14 describes what the journalist says, how he gave the New York Times $250 million. Now, that just says a lot about truth in journalism, doesn't it? As you read the text, you'll see he lent the New York Times $250 million and is charging them 14% annually. In addition, he obtains some warrants that allow him to buy some additional stock, and if he does, he becomes the largest shareholder of the New York Times. Now, the key question I asked on that slide, does 14% make private lending sound more interesting? Hopefully your answer is yes. Either way, let's move to slide 15, and I'll give you a very simple definition of a private lender. A private lender is a private individual or a company lending money against some collateral. What do I mean by collateral? Well, let me share a few examples on that same slide. Bank CDs, which we've already talked about, the collateral is the guarantee you get from the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. You may recall that institution is effectively bankrupt, but what the heck? If they can't meet all their obligations, they have a printing press to back them. Bonds, as I mentioned them as well, they are a private loan to the company, and what backs them is the assets of that company. Now, if you make a private loan to one of your relatives, you're a private lender. I have no idea what collateral you're getting, but you are a private lender. A less known example, tax liens, where you can lend the money to a local taxing authority, and the loan is backed by the property if it's not paid off. Now, even with a few of these examples, just these few, you can see that most listeners are private lenders. Most people have invested in bank CDs or in bonds or made loans to relatives. Therefore, they are private lenders. Now, as we switch to page or slide 16, I want to focus on a specific type of private lender, the private mortgage lender. Again, I share some examples. The hard money loan, which is backed by the deed of the property. A mortgage loan on an income-producing real estate, like a rental property. And just like a bank might lend on that rental property, just happens to be a private mortgage. And how about seller or owner financed properties? I won't cover the distinction between those two again today. We did talk about them in the past. And the least known example, and I include a lot of mortgage brokers in this not knowing about it, is called a collateral assignment. What that means is you use the private mortgage loan you made and use it as an asset to borrow a collateral to borrow against. All of these are private mortgage loans. And all of them are backed by the deed to a property. Now, from that example, I think you'll see that private mortgage loans are just like mortgage loans made by a bank. The difference is they're made by a private individual or private company. So let's move to slide 17. And I'll give you a little bit more detail on private mortgage lending. First of all, it is a direct investment in real estate. It's the fourth strategy. You're actually loaning on the property, and it diversifies your portfolio. We haven't talked about all of the commandments on this show yet, but the fifth commandment of investing is simply diversify. This helps you diversify. Now, the private mortgage loan also gives you true passive income, and it's the only direct investment in real estate that doesn't require you to buy or sell properties. It doesn't require you to rent or lease properties, and thus you don't deal with the four T's we've discussed in prior shows, and more importantly, doesn't even require you to look for clients. They tend to find you. See, in other forms of direct real estate investment, you spend a lot of time marketing and selling, but here, the clients find you. And I may have shared in the past that our company turns down more clients than we're able to fund. It's not because they're not good investments, it's just that demand far exceeds our current supply of funds. Now, one question I often get asked when we're defining private mortgage lending, is this some new financial instrument? Simple answer is no. And let me mention two things. First of all, I did my first private mortgage loan when I was 15 years old. And let me just say that's more than 10 years ago. And I'd also add that even 100 years ago, many homes and farms were bought and sold using private mortgage loans. Yes, over 100 years ago. So it's not new. It's just new to about 98% of the investors out there. Before we move ahead, I should remind our listeners, you're tuned to the Wealth DNA Radio Show. I'm your host, Ron Naraki. I look forward to you joining us every second and fourth Monday If you missed some of the prior shows, like the earlier ones on investing in real estate, or if you want to re-listen to them, we maintain an archive of shows on www.wealthdna.us. Now, if you'd like to get an email reminder of the shows, you can do one of two things, or of course, both of them. Send an email to me, ron@wealthdna.us. I'll keep you posted about future shows and events. Or in the upper left-hand side of the screen, way at the top, you'll see a picture of the Boomer and the Babe. Right below there, there's a follow button, just like that. And they will keep you posted about the great shows on that network. So, are we ready to get out? Go ahead. Let's talk a little bit about why you might want to become a private mortgage lender. Let's move on to slide 18, which is aptly titled, Why Be a Private Mortgage Lender? And I'll start by asking, why did Carlos Slim lend to the New York Times versus putting money in CDs or bonds? How about the $1 million bill sitting in front of you as part of the answer? The returns are far higher. And incidentally, on that single private loan that Carlos Slim made, he gets about three of those $1 million bills each month. Now, do you think you could trim your budget and learn to live on $3 million a month? I hope so. Let's go back to the very first topic we covered today. Bank CDs would pay you between 0.5% to 1.5%, depending on the length, of course, of that loan to the bank. A real estate investor pays a bank between 5.5% and 6.5% for a mortgage loan. If you were able to cut out the middleman, that allows you to earn 5.5% or even as much as 18% per year. And that's what I mean by saying learning to earn a higher return. On slide 19, I'll bring you back to our roadmap, what we've covered. And we're about to talk about the five factors you should use when you evaluate any investments. As we switch to slide number 20, you will see we're going to ask, what are those five factors? If you have the slide version, they're not coming up immediately. I'd like your response. What do you look at when you're choosing whether or not to invest in something? Whether stocks, bonds, CDs, treasury bills, commodities, gold, silver, maybe even foreign currencies, how do you decide which are best for you? What factors do you use to evaluate or compare your alternatives? Now, during our live seminars, I can control showing those answers. So I typically ask people, and I usually get about two answers from a group of about 30 people. The most common answer I get is rate of return is appropriate. And next, they either will mention risk or safety. Well, what are those five factors? By now, you see them. First is liquidity. Second is safety. Third is security. Next is rate of return. And as I mentioned, that's the most commonly mentioned by people. And fifth is the one that never gets mentioned when I ask the question, tax consequences. And with many of the items and lists I give you, when I say there are five, I'll often add a sixth, free of charge. And the sixth is social benefit. Now, the best summary for me of these five factors choosing an investment is this quote by Will Rogers. I am more concerned about the return of my money than the return on my money. See, I'm sure Carlos Slim would not be excited about a 14% return if he felt his original $250 million could be lost in a Ponzi scheme. So if you only chase rate of return and you don't pay attention to the safety, security, and liquidity, you could end up not being better off than when you started. Now, if I ask our investors what's the most important thing to them before reviewing this list, most of them say safety and security are most important. Some use the phrase of paramount importance. Now, I'd like to use this same list, these five or six factors, to evaluate private mortgage loans. Let's do that on slide 21. We'll start out, of course, with liquidity. And liquidity is your ability to get at your money. There are several positives for private mortgage loans. First of all, you do get interest checks monthly, or you should, just like a bank gets on your home mortgage. Now, recall with CDs, you had no cash flow until the CD matured. Next, I would mention that you can also do private mortgage loans with a fairly short time frame. So you don't have to wait 30 years the way a bank might to get the principal back. Just because banks do it doesn't mean you do. And most importantly, you can sell your private mortgage loan, as I mentioned earlier, or take a loan against that by using a collateral assignment. So you can get at a lot of your cash. Recall what I mentioned about banks using mortgage loans for borrowing from the Fed. You too can use those mortgage loans as collateral to borrow from other private individuals or private companies, and thus leverage your money just like the banks do. Now, the second factor is, very simply, safety. And the easiest way to define safety is a lack of risk. Fair enough? I don't know of a clearer way to say it. Now, how do private mortgage lenders, or loans, sorry, stack up on safety? First of all, real estate like gold, silver, oil, and other commodities does not go to zero during the Great Recession or even the Great Depression. Real estate always had a value. It may go down, but it doesn't go to zero. Your stocks and even your bonds can become worthless. Secondly, especially if you're making a short-term mortgage loan, the value doesn't drop just because the interest rates rise. You certainly realize that bond values will decrease as interest rates drop. If you make your mortgage loan to investors, as I suggest, even if their client, a tenant, happens to default, doesn't mean your client, your borrower, defaults. That investor merely finds another tenant. And by the way, it is easier to find a tenant than it is for an owner-occupant to find the next job if he's unemployed. And yet banks prefer owner-occupants. Bank logic, an oxymoron. Let's move on to slide 22. The third factor is security. And what do I mean by security? What facts? What's the collateral behind this loan? Well, the private mortgage loan is backed by a deed of trust. It might be called a mortgage in some states, or depending on the part of the world you're living in, it's either going to be a deed of trust or a mortgage. It's also backed by title insurance, as well as property insurance. So even if the place burns down, chances are you'll get all of your money back. And thirdly, most importantly, if your borrower defaults, you own the property. Most people don't realize that if your borrower files for bankruptcy, your deed of trust actually trumps the bankruptcy. You either get your mortgage paid off, or you get the property. But you say, Ron, this all sounds wonderful, but isn't this the same strategy that banks used and are in a lot of trouble during the Great Recession? For that matter, they're still in trouble. I predicted this question since I've got a savvy audience. So what I put together is slide 23. Let's talk about the banks, what the banks did that you will not do. Sound good? First of all, don't sell your loans with credit default swaps. You see, it meant that as loan values declined, which they did, the banks were on the hook to refund the losses to buyers of those loans. They didn't have the money to cover it. Secondly, don't lend 100% of the purchase price, and definitely don't lend more than 100% of the purchase price, which banks did. And third, don't give the buyer the title to live in the property. Investors are much safer. If you will, borrowers than owner-occupants are. And again, as I mentioned, banks prefer the opposite. If the tenant living in the property defaults, our borrower, the investor, motivated to find another tenant. If the bank's borrower loses their job, very often the loan goes into default. Let's move into slide 24 when I'll tell you what you should be doing that banks sometimes didn't. As a matter of fact, very often didn't. Lend only on income-producing real estate, not owner-occupied. You see, owner-occupied property doesn't earn any income. It's the owner's income that pays the mortgage. And if their income stops because they lose a job or their business fails, the loan often goes into default. Lend only to investors with good credit and assets. Gee, that wasn't important to banks at all for a while. And lend with either a corporate and or personal guarantees. Again, that wasn't terribly important to banks in the heydays. So the fact that banks ran into problems lending the way they did does not mean it's a bad investment. They're just bad investors. And that doesn't apply to you. Okay, let's go back to the five factors on slide 25. I list the fourth one, rate of return, which again, most investors think of first. Incidentally, I like the analogy of surveying airline passengers. If you ask them how they chose the last flight they took, they usually mention price, convenient time to travel, or maybe even frequent flyer miles. Then if you ask them about safety, they'll admit that's far more important than the other factors. They just assume that all airlines are safe. Well, we as investors, and frankly, even as airline passengers, we can't make that assumption. Now, what are the rate of returns on private mortgage loans? Well, if you get good guarantees from the investor or the investor's company, expect to earn 5% or more. If you don't get very solid guarantees, meaning you might end up with the property if there is a problem, you should earn about 8% or more to compensate for that additional risk. Now, in all cases, those interest rates are linked to mortgage rates for investors. So today, they're paying between 5 and 6.5% or 5.5 to 6.5%. When bank loans, mortgage rates go up, and they will, you can expect future private mortgage loans to pay you a higher return. How about factor five, the one that's never mentioned by investors until we prompt them? Private mortgage loans are fully taxable, full disclosure. Unless, of course, you're using your self-directed IRA. Now, the good news is if you use OPM, and you, of course, know that stands for other people's money, then you can deduct that against your earnings. Now, on slide 26, I summarize some of these points with a simple check. A monthly check sent by one of our subsidiaries to a private mortgage lender. Now, would an extra $1,000 per month come in handy? I can assure you it takes far less money to earn $1,000 a month using private mortgage loans than it does in bonds, CDs, or treasury bills. On slide 27, I move on to the sixth of the five factors, social benefit. And I can assure you, private lenders do much more for the local economy than the government does. On slide 28, I dig in a little deeper. And if you have the slide version, they will be flashing on there for you slowly. There are a number of people in local companies that benefit from every private mortgage loan made, starting with the home buyer, who's often an investor, the various people involved in the transaction, realtors, appraisers, title companies, and of course, all of the contractors hired to fix up the property. And I think I missed roofers and air conditioners here, and we use them a lot. And how about the cities and towns that are now able to collect property taxes, or the bank shareholders since they've just sold off another toxic asset off of their list, and of course you, the investor, who collects interest? Add them all up, and there's a huge benefit to the local economy. While we're talking about why you should invest in private mortgage loans, I'd like to cover one more aspect, even though I should be comparing private mortgage loans only to lending alternatives. I'm going to go out on a kind of on a limb here, and I'm going to compare them to some owning investments. Let's switch to slide 29. And a few years ago, people thought that it was absolutely conventional wisdom, and it must be true that in order to make money, you have to invest with the big name gurus. You can't, of course, get ahead by just investing in fixed rate returns like bonds, can you? Well, on slide 30, I'm going to show you the first of several pictures, and then another one will come up if you don't recognize one of these big name gurus. First picture shows you him in his trading room. If you didn't recognize him, the second picture probably made you recognize him quickly. And that's when he was hiding from the press, being escorted from the jail to the courtrooms. In my live seminars, I ask people who this is, and the best answer I ever got was, gee, I don't remember his name, but he sure made off with a lot of people's money. Yes, I'm talking about Bernie Madoff. So I need to remind you, some of those big-name gurus promising you high returns are indeed crooks. You need to know who you're dealing with and read about what they're investing in. Now, in Bernie's case, he didn't tell you what he was investing in. Now we know why. He wasn't investing. He was spending your money. Now, on slide 31, I show you the first of several charts that give you 10-year returns of very conservative private mortgage loans, the little red straight lines to their steady monthly income, and then the S&P stock market. And I've picked my starting point from 1998 through 2007, partially because they basically ended up both about 50% over that 10-year period. During that time, we had two very strong bull markets, and yet that stock market did not beat a very conservative private mortgage loan. Let's flip to the next chart, and all I've done is move the time period forward 1 year. It's now from 99 through 2008. Now, again, comparing to the same private mortgage loans, how did the stock market do? Well, unfortunately, the stock market was down 20% over that 10-year period versus the private mortgage loans, which were up 50%. So you ended up worse off than when you started. Now, on slide 33, I just continue the process. I move another year forward, and we're looking at 2000 through 2009. Now, 2009 was a very good year for the stock market. Your stock portfolio is still down 20% over 10 years. Certainly, the next 10-year period must be far better, right? So let's switch to the next slide. And yes, from 2001 to 2010, things look better. You ended up flat. So 10 years and you earned nothing, whereas your private mortgage loans were up. And these are the conservative ones. We're up 50% during that time period. Now, if you wait till the very bottom of the market, things have got to look better. So let's look ahead another year from 2002 to 2012. Well, we're still flat in the stock market, still up in the private mortgage loans. Let's look ahead one more year. Now, it turns out I can't tell you how 2012 is going to end. I'm not allowed to. So what I did was drew it as if they both ended the same. So what does the stock market have to do this year, 2012, to end up in a 10-year period matching the most conservative private mortgage loans? The answer is 4.9% increase for the year. So far it's on track, but as I mentioned, I can't tell you how this year will end. Now, what I just shared with you, as I mentioned, is a bit unfair, because I compared loaning alternative to owning alternatives. Owning an alternative should have much higher returns and just more volatility. The private mortgage loans will give you a steady income, but not come close to the returns in the stock market. Well, as I mentioned earlier, all general rules have exceptions. Don't you wish you were investing in conservative private mortgage loans for the last 15 years? Note, please do not assume that bonds will perform as well in the future as private mortgage loans will. As interest rates rise, bonds will be an awful investment. I reminded you, you'll remember if you don't take my advice. Now, on slide 37, I take you back to our roadmap. You'll see we've covered most of the topics, but now it's time to talk about the important stuff. How do you do private mortgage lending? And what assets can you use? Now, before we move on to that topic, let me remind our listeners that you're tuned to the Wealth DNA radio show. I'm your host, Ron Naraki. You can listen to the earlier portion on the archive, or if you missed prior shows, you can find them on the archive, www.wealthdna.us. Today, we're holding a Learn to Earn a Higher Return seminar on the air. To follow along with the presentation, just go to wealthdna.us and download either the PDF or PowerPoint slides. We're currently on slide 37. Now back to the seminar, how to do private mortgage loans and what assets can you use. Let's move on to slide 38. A very key slide. You're going to want to keep a copy of this handy when you do your first deals. It summarizes the key steps. The most important are the first and the last steps. The first being that you are the bank. So in viewing this and thinking about this, put yourself on the banker's side of the desk, not on the side you sat on when you were filling out an application for a mortgage loan on your property. Sit on the banker's side. Very key, and what often stops investors from moving ahead is finding your first borrowers. And I can assure you, there are many wherever you live. Now, once you meet one or more of those borrowers, you obviously need to get to know them, find out if they're trustworthy, experienced, if they're people you're willing to lend your money to. On the other hand, keep in mind your investment is secured by the property. So even if they do default, you end up with the property. So that takes us to the next one. Evaluating each deal that the borrowers bring you is very critical. You want to make sure your loan is below the value of the property. And remember, you are the bank. So you've got to determine what you want. When you walked into the banker for your mortgage loan, you didn't tell him you wanted to pay 3%, get a 50-year mortgage, and you were only going to pay your payments once a year at the end of the year. The banker set those terms, and you either took them or you moved to another bank. Now, when it comes to private mortgage lending, you are the bank. You set the terms. My favorite expression for this is the golden rule. Why? A person with the gold makes the rules. That's the golden rule. Now, once you've decided what terms and conditions you want, you need to negotiate them with your borrowers. With that all put in place, you're going to close the deal with the title company. Very important step, and I didn't say maybe you are going to use a title company. And the final, very important step is to cash your checks. Every investor that works with us, I remind them that this may be easy, but it sure is important. If one of those checks bounce, it could be a signal of a default coming up. You want to know as soon as you can. Don't sit on that check for a number of months. On slide 39, another key page you'll want to refer to in the future. Here I list each of the key documents you're going to need in each private mortgage loan. The first is a note or promissory note. This is your agreement with the borrower, the terms and conditions you agreed on. Very important, you're going to include some sort of personal guarantees or recourse if they do default. And an important point to mention is property taxes and insurance must be kept current. The second document is either called a trust deed or deed of trust, same thing. Or it could be called a mortgage in the area where the property is located. Whatever it's called, it's the document that pledges the property if the note terms are violated. Most important, this document must be recorded. I didn't give you an option. It must be recorded. The next document is lender's title insurance. And don't let the borrower talk you out of it. This is your assurance that you get your money if there was a cloudy title. For example, let's say some overly aggressive mortgage bank had a robo-signer working overtime, and the property wasn't supposed to go into foreclosure, but did. Now, who owns the property? On the property insurance, you must be named as either a mortgagee, co-beneficiary, or, as some companies call it, additionally insured. Again, no option. You must be named on that policy. The last document is the lender's instructions, which tells the title company what their obligation to you is as a lender, what they're supposed to do on your behalf. Now, I don't want you to get that deer in the headlights look of, but oh my God, how am I going to fill that out and tell them what they're supposed to do? I don't know. The title company will prepare these documents if you'd like. You just tell them what the terms were that you negotiated. Now, in my case, I've developed documents that we're comfortable with. It avoids me rereading every single title company's version and adjusting it to our needs. I just ask them to use ours. As I mentioned, these two slides, 38 and 39, will be great references for you on your first deals, or if there's a long period between deals. Now, one other topic I want to cover on this particular subsection is mortgageable equity, and that's on page 40, or slide 40. It's a lot broader than just equity. And I learned this concept from a real estate guru by the name of Greg Pinio, great guy. It factors in the equity, your loan to value, the interest rates, and the cash flow to make your payments. Now, rather than spending a whole round the top work, it's an important brief. If you're getting the borrower $1,000 a month, and he's earning, he or she are earning $900 per month in rent, and on top of it, they got to pay property taxes, insurance, and operating expenses, then regardless of your loan value or your equity, this investor will likely default. He's not earning enough each month to make the payments, so there is no mortgageable equity. And the higher the interest rate, by the way, the lower the mortgageable equity. Something to look into, something to really understand. You want to make sure the cash flow covers your payments. And one more important topic when we're talking about how to make a private mortgage loan is what funds to use. The simple answer, any funds that you would invest in financial markets. This can include your after-tax funds like savings, or it could include your IRAs that you have. So money that you now have with your broker or in mutual funds or in IRAs can be converted to true self-directed IRAs if they are IRAs. Now, here in IRAs, you're able to do traditionals, Roths, as well as solo 401ks. A number of people ask me, how about 401ks? The answer is maybe. You've got to ask your administrator. Key question to ask is, do they allow in-service withdrawals? Now, I'm not saying you're going to withdraw the funds from your IRA or 401k. You're rolling them over directly to a true self-directed IRA. So you'll not be taxed unless you happen to move from traditional to Roth IRA, a totally separate topic. It's a tax planning strategy. So if I wanted to answer the common question I get, well, okay, Ron, if I've got $1 million in my IRA, I've got $1 million of taxable money, which should I use to invest in which of the real estate investing strategies? On this table in slide 42, I have the answer for you. If you're using your IRA, use it for fix and flip properties or for private mortgage lending. Both are fully taxable. On the other hand, use your taxable money for rental properties and lease to own. Why? Both of them have tax breaks for deducting the depreciation that you can take advantage of if you use taxable money. If you use your IRA funds, you can't take advantage of those tax deductions. Not a good thing. But again, if you have a choice, this is the way you do it. Let's move to slide 43, and we're back to our roadmap. I've covered the good news. Well, I've covered it, but let me do it again. I'm going to cover the returns. That's the good news. And then I'm going to try to scare you off so that you'll never want to do a private mortgage loan. I'm, of course, kidding. But we're going to cover the legal licensing, the taxes, and the risks. Just want to be complete in covering all of these aspects. All right, on slide 44, I summarize again what the returns are, depending on how solid the guarantees are from your borrower. And if you're doing hard money loans and you're doing them by yourself, you can earn up to 18%. In all cases, as mortgage loan interest rates rise, these rates will rise too. You can't imagine if mortgage rates were 20% that hard money lenders would allow you to borrow at only 18%. Definitely not. Okay, legal aspects on slide 45. Let me start out by saying it's not terribly complicated from a legal standpoint. Generally, a title company is able to handle all of the paperwork. Unless you happen to be in a jurisdiction that uses lawyers, in that case, you might have to use a lawyer, of course. Now, we have a lawyer retained because we do a lot of loans both ways, borrowing and lending. And we also have business licenses in several cities and towns, wherever we own properties. You won't require that. You should, on the other hand, have a business license at least in the city where your business is located, where your office is located. Okay, so I do suggest having that. If you choose to do mortgage pools by having a number of investors invest in a number of mortgages, that requires SEC registrations. A complicated and expensive process. My simple advice, avoid it. On slide 46, I'll tell you a little bit more about some alternatives. But first, I will mention something that's real important as we talk about the licensing. What we are doing from a legal standpoint is we are doing commercial loans on residential properties. Now, if that sounds like an oxymoron, let's just break it down into the two pieces. First of all, they are commercial loans because we're lending to investors. People are buying these properties for investment purposes. They're not buying them to live in. But we are lending on residential properties, not commercial properties. So that's why I say they're commercial loans on residential properties. Now, this is important because the interest rates that you're going to charge your borrower might violate predatory lending otherwise. Now, I mentioned earlier that you shouldn't use mortgage pools, right? But you say, then give me some alternatives. So here they are. You've got two alternatives. If you have several lenders partnering on one or more mortgages, you could create an LLC, and it's owned by the investors, and the operating agreement says how will the money be split. Now, if it's only a few investors, the largest investor could also just take first position mortgage and the next a second position. I wouldn't suggest going beyond three loans on a property. You'd better move to the LLC option in that case. And by the way, that LLC could also be used to do multiple loans, so it's not a one-time deal. Let's move on to slide 47, and now we'll talk about licensing, a recent topic. You see, we didn't have to deal with this when we did commercial loans on residential properties up until 2010. That's when the SAFE Act went into effect. And doesn't it seem like perfect timing to add a complication to private mortgage lending just as banks stopped mortgage lending? Did somebody mention Murphy's Law? Sure sounds like it, doesn't it? I won't go through all of the details of this act. It's pretty well documented on the internet. The key thing you should know, there are two key exemptions from needing a lender's license. If you're only going to do a few loans per year, five loans is specifically mentioned as an exemption. And secondly, if you're placing your loans through a licensed lender, we'll talk more about partnering today. If you partner, you should work with a licensed lender to make sure you stay exempt. All right, let's move on to slide 48 and the tax aspects, which sometimes scare people off, since it is fully taxable, as I said. And again, your alternative is to use a truly self-directed IRA, and that way you can defer or avoid the taxes. Now, I'm not talking about tax avoidance. I'm talking about using a Roth IRA. Now, if your borrower is a company, then you should issue a 1099, or I'm sorry, they should issue you a 1099 INT. Since you lent them money, they're paying you interest, they should, at the beginning of the next year, send you a 1099 INT. I can assure you, most borrowers have no idea they should do that. But as a private mortgage lender, just like a bank or any financial institution, you do need to file and give the borrower a 1098, and you'll send a copy of that and the 1096 to the IRS as well. And by the way, this has to be done by January 31st. It's not April 15th with your tax return. If your borrower is a company, you're not obligated, but I do. You can issue a 1098 to a company as well. Now, recall that I mentioned that OPM is tax deductible, so let's move to slide 49, and any OPM, other people's money you use, you are going to issue 1099 INTs to them to make sure that it's deductible investment interest. And again, there are some exceptions. You don't have to issue the 1099 INT if it's a corporation that lent you the money, which could be a bank or it could be BI Solutions. If it's an insurance company, another exemption. And remember, in our OPM series, we talked about borrowing from your insurance policy. Hint, if you use a mortgage or a HELOC, the cheapest form of OPM, or if you use credit card 0% offers, these are great. Another hint, I'm using about $75,000 of credit card money right now to lend. It's costing me about 3 to 4% per year, and I can assure you I'm earning far more than that on private mortgage loans. Great sources of OPM. Just make sure that unless it's one of these exceptions, you send Aunt Sally her 1099 INT. You don't want to violate the IRS rules. Now on slide 50, just for fun, I show you one of the red tax forms. They really are red. And I figured if you see one and you realize that it's just a matter of filling it out, and of course I didn't include our borrowers, our lenders, Social Security or tax ID number here for security purposes, nor their name and address. But it is a filled out form. It is red. Next time you get one and you're filling it out, you won't be as scared once you've seen one. It really is just an information return. Okay. Speaking of scaring you, let's move to slide 51. And that's where we'll talk about the risks. This will scare you away for good, right? Well, actually not. You see, private mortgage loans are much lower risk than tax liens, bonds, stocks, angel investing, private equity, and personal loans to your cousin. Borrower performance is your primary risk. Keep in mind, you're the bank, so if you lend to a borrower who defaults, you are going to have to foreclose. That'll cost you between $2,000 to $4,000. You can either use a title company or a lawyer. I highly suggest a title company. What does a lawyer do? They hire a title company, and then they charge you twice. The next big risk is property valuation. You lend $100,000 from property, and it's only worth $90,000. This was a big issue during the Great Recession. Two key factors that are forgotten by most lenders that you'll have some costs and time spent in reselling the property if you do foreclose, and your money is not earning anything during that foreclosure and sale process. So making sure your valuation's right and your borrower performance is right are really quite important. There is some good news, though. More good news. Today, property values are at 10 to 12-year lows. I should remind you that this additional risk is good news. If you foreclose and sell that property, you might earn more than your original investment. Now that, my friends, is the kind of risk I like. Let's move on to slide 52 if I haven't scared you away. Our final topic. Do you want to do it yourself or do you want a partner? Well, to help you make that decision, on slide 53, I start providing you, first of all, a representation of who the entities are. So you have the property itself, your client who's an investor investing in that property, and you as the lender. All right, those are the three entities involved, and each of those arrowheads really means something. The property, you have a deed of trust on it. There's one arrowhead. You don't do anything else with the property as long as the loan is current. Your client, you're lending them money. They're paying you interest. Your client is fixing up the property and collecting rents or other income. Now, on slide 54, I show you some of the pluses and minuses. First of all, the big pluses of doing it yourself. You set the terms, you earn all the money. You don't have to argue with anybody about what the terms should be. The minuses, on the other hand, you do all the work. That does hurt, doesn't it? Which includes finding clients. And the most important, I think, the biggest disadvantage of doing it yourself is trying to match the timing and the amounts you have available with the deals out there. You see, if a borrower needs the money by next Friday and your money won't be available for a month and a half because you're rolling it over, that deal won't work. Now, if the borrower needs $150,000 and you have $80,000, that deal won't work either. And the final minus, you take all the risk. Now, on page 55, we'll start talking about what about partnering. We've introduced in my little chart that you've added in a partner, a lender, who is working with you to find clients and do part of the work. All right. They probably also will handle, and you see the arrowheads there, they're going to handle the payments most likely for you and double check things to make sure. And if there's a foreclosure, they'll probably handle that for you. Now, there are a number of pluses for partnering, and I list many of them on slide 56. You generally don't need to find and check out the clients. Your partner may have plenty of them. Hopefully, your partner has a track record of success and references, and maybe has accumulated a multi-million-dollar portfolio and some strong cash flow, so he or she already knows what they're doing, or they, I should say, that it is they. In some cases, that partner will guarantee repayment and interest payments, even if the client defaults. And these are the deals I mentioned with a lower but safer return. Your partner will likely make sure that you get monthly or at least quarterly interest checks, and then you can expect your partner to handle the due diligence on the borrower, the property, and to make sure there's sufficient mortgageable equity. If your partner doesn't know what mortgageable equity is, find another partner. For the lists of pluses and minuses, they continue here, by the way, on 57. There are more pluses. You can choose the best tenant buyers and borrowers because it's going to help you find your own. And most likely your partner will also handle all the tax filings, unless, of course, you borrowed from Aunt Sally and the partner says, no, you handle your OPM filings on your own. Sometimes they will, sometimes they won't. The big one is you can use much lower minimum investments because they can help you find deals that match the amount you have available. So if you only have $40,000 or $50,000 to lend, you'll have difficulty finding deals, whereas a partner can specifically approach the clients they know, focus on smaller deals. Now, that's a pretty long list of potential pluses, so there must be some minuses. Most important is that you'll get a lower interest rate. And since your partner's going to earn part of the return, right? Now, when I bring up this point, it's like when someone asks me, how's your wife? My inclination is to answer, compared to what? And similarly, when I say slightly lower interest rate, it's still far higher than you would earn on CDs, T-bills, or bonds, all of which are fixed income investments, just like private mortgage loans. And keep in mind, private mortgage loans are secured by real property. The others are not. Now, the other negative is, of course, that you have to find a good partner. Do some due diligence on them, and you will still want to review the due diligence on each property loan you're going to invest in. In this presentation, I included an overview. So if you go to page 58, you'll see several pages there. It shows an overview of the kinds of deals investors come to us for to help them find. And I won't cover those on the air. You can peruse them, think through them, and feel free to call me with any questions. In the way of a summary, I thought I'd share what should be obvious by now, and it's on slide 65. To be a private mortgage lender, you need some money. And I would say the absolute minimum is about $10,000. There are some cases that people with good credit can become lenders using OPM. And if you get a lot of 0% credit card balance transfers and you're not taking advantage of them, then obviously contact me. I'll tell you more about how you can get started building your wealth while extending your credit capacity. Two positives in one deal. Now, you will also need several hours a month to evaluate deals or to find a good partner, and of course, to cash those checks. Private mortgage lending is ideally suited, and I list these on the chart, for conservative or savvy, conservative savers and investors, or the part of your portfolio that you would allocate to fixed income, for example, bonds. It's also great for people that don't have a lot of time to do direct real estate investing on their own, because they're working a full-time job and working 80 or 90 hours a week. As I mentioned, it's also a great way to diversify your portfolio that's primarily in Wall Street financial securities. Now, I would discourage you from considering private mortgage lending if you're the type of person who's looking for 25, 50, or 100% returns, or making lots of money with no money down. In other words, the person who would rather trade options or commodity futures than to put up with a steady income. To wrap up my summary, I remind you on the very next slide of the billion-dollar briefcase. That's our goal, to make you much wealthier. And on 67, of course, I include my contact information in case I didn't cover something fully. Now, for regular listeners, you notice this show was very different than the usual. We not only had an on-air seminar, we did it in a multimedia format. Hopefully it worked for you, and I'd love to get your feedback, either in the chat window or by email. Even though we specifically titled today's show, Learn to Earn a Higher Return, I hope you realize that tuning into the show every 2 weeks is a great way to learn to earn a higher return and also to inspire you to be as wealthy as you want to be. We want each of you to have a billion-dollar briefcase. The next Wealth DNA radio show is the second Monday of August, Monday, August 13th, 8 a.m. Arizona time, same place, same time. And I'll remind you, the archives of past shows, as well as this one, are available on wealthdna.us. If you have some suggestions, questions, whether it's about real estate or other investments, or if you haven't received emails reminding you about this show, just send an email to me, ron@wealthdna.us. And we'll keep you posted about future shows and events. Finally, folks, happy investing.
You've been listening to Wealth DNA with the Ronald, Ron Naraki. Wealth DNA is a Boomer and the Babe Enterprises radio production. Contact them at boomerandthebabe.com.